वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। हरे कृष्ण। वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 2। महाराज निमी मीट्स द 9 योगेंद्रस। टेक्स्ट नंबर 6 टुडे। भजन्ति ये यथा देवान् देवा अपि तथैव तान् छायेव कर्म सचिवा साधवो दीनवत्सला। भजन्ति ये यथा देवान् देवा अपि तथैव तान् छायेव कर्म सचिवा साधवो दीनवत्सला। भजन्ति ये यथा देवान् देवा अपि तथैव तान् छायेव कर्म सचिवा साधवो दीनवत्सला। साधवो दीनवत्सला। कर्म सचिवा साधवो दीनवत्सला।
माताजी see the word to word translation. Bhajanti, worship. Ye, they who, yatha, in which way, devan, the demigods, deva, the demigods, api, also, tathaiva, just in that way, tan, them, chaya, in a shadow, eva, as if, karma, of material work and its reactions, of material work and its reactions, sachiva, the attendants, sadhava, saintly persons, dinavatsala, merciful to the fallen. Translation and purport by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering. The demigods are attendants of karma like a person's shadow. But sadhus are actually merciful to the fallen. Purport. The words Chayeva karma sachiva are significant here. Chaya means shadow. The shadow of the body precisely follows the movements of the body. The shadow has no power to move in a way different from the movement of the body. Similarly, as stated here, bhajanti ye yatha devan, deva api tathaiva tan. The results demigods award to living beings correspond exactly to the living beings' actions. The demigods are empowered by the Lord to follow precisely the particular karma of a living entity in awarding him happiness and distress. Just as a shadow cannot move independently, the demigods cannot punish or reward a living being independently. Although the demigods are millions of times more powerful than the human beings on earth, they are ultimately tiny servants of God whom the Lord allows to play as the controllers of the universe. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prithu Maharaj, an empowered incarnation of the Lord, states, "Even the demigods are subject to punishment by the Lord if they deviate from His laws. On the other hand, devotees of the Lord, such as Narad Muni, by their potent preaching, can interfere in the karma of a living being by persuading him to give up his fruitive activity and mental speculation and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In material existence, one works hard under the bondage of ignorance. But if one becomes enlightened by the association with a pure devotee of the Lord, one can understand one's actual position as an eternal servant of God. By rendering such service, one dissolves his attachment to the material world and reactions of his previous activities, and as a surrendered soul, he is endowed with unlimited spiritual freedom in the service of the Lord." In this regard, the Brahma Samhita 5.54 states, "Yastu Indra Gopamatha Vendra Mahoswakarma Bandha Nurupa Falabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdhati Kintucha Bhakti Bhajam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami." I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns to the root all the fruitive activities of those imbued with devotion. For those who walk the path of work, no less for Indra, king of the demigods, than for the tiny insect, Indra Gopa, he impartially ordains the due enjoyments of the fruits of activities in accordance with the chain of works previously performed. So this was quote unquote. Now begins the purport again. "Even the demigods are bound to the laws of karma, whereas a pure devotee of the Lord, having completely given up the desire for material enjoyment, successfully burns to ashes all traces of karma. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya
Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So I seek the blessings of all those who are assembled here so that we can attempt to explain this very sensitive, it's a culturally very sensitive topic. Nevertheless, it's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we are expected to clarify what is being discussed here. So in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which explains the activities of Maharaj Bharat. And Prabhupada explains that this land of Bharat derives its name from this king, Bharat. So it is mentioned how he would be engaged in performing sacrifices. And these sacrifices would be as per Vedic injunctions. So many times the oblations would be offered to particular demigods. Indraya Swaha, Chandraya Swaha, Suryaya Swaha and so on. But we also hear that he was the best child of his father, King Rishabhdev. So the incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And he is also himself a very great devotee, Bharat Maharaj. So when Bharat Maharaj as a pure devotee is offering oblations into the sacrifice, the demigods, it is mentioned what was his consciousness inside. His consciousness inside was, oh, I am offering this oblation to the hand of the Supreme Lord. I am offering these oblations to the different parts of the Supreme Lord, the eyes of the Supreme Lord, and so on. So externally, it seemed that he was offering oblations to the demigods, but internally, he was very clear. These are just different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord. In that sense, they are non-different from the Supreme Lord. Krishna is also mentioning in the 9th chapter, 23rd shloka, Yepi Anya Devata Bhakta Yajante Shraddhayanvita. So he is talking of those who are offering with Shraddha. He is not talking of those who just offer it as a ritual. And then he says, Tepi Mam Eva Kaunteya. He stakes his claim to all that worship. Actually, they are all worshipping me if they are doing it with Shraddha. So Shraddha here means as per the injunctions of the Vedic scriptures. Tepi maam eva kaunteya. But then he clarifies, yajanti avidhi purvakam. There is a vidhi to worshipping me. Now these people, they are not following that vidhi. They are following something else and they want to worship me in their own way. So, yes, this understanding is there that the demigods are the representatives of the Supreme Lord. In 3.11 purport of the Gita, Srila Prabhupada defines what are the demigods. So what are the demigods? Demigods are empowered administrators of material affairs. So here again that word, such a nice definition, empowered administrators of material affairs. They are administrators of material affairs, but they have been empowered to do so. They have been appointed in that position. Krishna also mentions, Maya Adhyakshena. So how does this material nature work? Prakriti, Suyate Sa Characharam. It happens under the control of the demigods. But those demigods themselves are under the Adhyaksha. They are under the supervision of the Supreme Lord Himself. So there is a connection between the Supreme Lord and the demigods. And when somebody worships the demigods, it's not totally non-bona fide. But then Krishna is saying Himself, Yajanti Avidhi Purvakam. So He would rather want people to worship Him. So in India especially, you know, this is a very culturally sensitive topic, to present how there is in the Hindu concept, in the Vedic concept. Actually, there is one God. It is monotheism. It's not polytheism, many gods. It's not pantheism, everyone is God. In the six-session Gita course, those who conduct the six-session Gita course, they understand how, you know, this is that day which decides who stays and who leaves. So usually, as per the standard protocol, it's on the fourth day. This topic is covered on the fourth day. So till the third day, search for happiness, and who am I, and qualities of the Supreme Lord. Yes, six opulences and all, everything is accepted. But then when there is a distinction between the personalities whom people have been worshipping till now and mentioning that actually the original personality is he and even these demigods also internally worship him, that's where the litmus test happens. So usually there is a drop of people on the fifth day and the sixth day. But then these are the people who understand the whole picture. These are the people who don't want to stick to their own conceptions that they carried before the start of the six-session course. So why do people get offended? Why do people drop out on the fifth day? Because they feel, you know, this word called demigod, is it some kind of an insult or something? So, you know, if you have come across, there is also a prefix in English called semi. This is demi, there's a prefix called semi, is it not? So what is the difference, semi, demi? There's also one more prefix in English called hemi, yes, hemisphere. So semi usually means half, like you have a semicircle. So semicircle means half circle. Yes. The word demi, when you apply the prefix demi, demi is not exactly half, demi means lesser. So imagine if, because this term was invented by Srila Prabhupada, if you see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's books, he uses the word devatas. He does not use the word. Also for the deity, deity is a word used primarily by Srila Prabhupada. He would call it Shri Murti. So, but Prabhupada uses these words very often, demigods and deities. So he specifically chose this word demigod. So semi is like half. So when you call somebody a semi-god, if Prabhupada would have chosen that word, it would have mean he's like half god or something. So then that's kind of an insult. Oh, he just has half the power or something. But then Prabhupada is using the word demigod. So demigod means he is an authority. He is a worshipable person. In the purport of today, we read how the demigods are millions of times more powerful than ordinary living entities. There's no doubt about their power. But then, not full. It's not half, but not full. They are not fully the Supreme Lord, although they appear to be in charge of affairs. And then those who actually understand the Gita, they understand how they are departmental heads. So, they are empowered administrators, and they are the ones who have been given that position by the Supreme Lord. So, we cannot neglect the servant if we truly want to worship the master. But if we worship the servant as the master, that itself is not a correct thing. So we see in the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who preached pure bhakti, anya abhilashita shunya. If you see in the life of Lord Chaitanya, when he moved around throughout India, especially in South India, he himself personally visited so many temples of Lord Krishna, Vishnu, but he also visited so many temples of Lord Shiva. He went to Shiva Kanchi. He went to one place called where there is a temple of Mallikarjun. So there are many temples during his journey specifically worshipping demigods, like Lord Shiva especially. But Lord Chaitanya went to those temples. But what did he do there? That is something to be learned from. He chanted Hare Krishna there. Because he could see one way of pleasing this personality is by singing his praises. Deva ho deva, Ganapati deva, tumse badkar kon. And there's another way of glorifying the same personality by saying, I worship the same person whom you worship. So a common example, Lord Shiva, we see, is always meditating. He always has his beads in his hand, or he is sitting erect and his eyes half closed. So if we read the sixth chapter of the Gita, one of the things that Lord Krishna mentions for Dhyana Yoga is, don't close your eyes fully, don't close your eyes, don't open your eyes. Yes? So if you see the posture of Lord Shiva and you read the verses in the Gita, he said, don't sit too erect, don't sit too, very loose. Yes. So if you see all the shlokas in the Gita, which Lord Krishna mentions to Arjuna, and you see the posture of Lord Shiva, They exactly match each other. He says, sit on a deer skin. Lord Shiva sits on a deer skin. So he's practicing the process of Dhyana Yoga, meditating on Lord Krishna, but then we tend to misunderstand him. So it is said, you know, why is this injunction very clearly mentioned that we should worship Lord Krishna only? So as per Lord Chaitanya's teachings that we have received in Parampara, actually the theists and the atheists both insult the Supreme Lord. The atheists insult the Supreme Lord by denying his existence. And the theists insult the Supreme Lord by degrading his existence. So one person says he does not exist. Another person says, yes, he exists only to serve me. So unless we come out of this mentality, so one part of dealing with the problem today in preaching pure bhakti is to establish the existence of God. So if you see the first two or three sessions of the six session course, it is to establish the existence of God. And then later two or three sessions are to define who is God. Is he there meant to serve me? So primarily when we ask somebody, so are you an atheist or are you a theist? Chances are in India, culturally he will say I'm a theist. Good chances. Although there are some people who want to speak their atheist. But then if you ask him, what makes you think you are a theist? And if you hear what he says, mostly it's based on very sentimental understanding. One time I did not study for my exam, then I prayed to God just before the exam, and then I got good marks in the exam, so that proves God exists. And if you ask some atheist, why don't you believe in, so that, you know, I saw some event, and how could this happen? How could God allow this to happen? So most of the times they are circumstantial atheists. So again, whether God exists or does not exist, it all depends on my experience. So the center, the focus, the locus standi as they say, has not yet moved from me. So the first thing that we need to understand about God is, who is God independently? We call him the absolute truth. We don't call him the subjective truth. We don't call him the relative truth. So God is God independently, absolutely. God is not God because I call him God. God is not God because out of 100 people here, 99 call him God. What if tomorrow the ratio changes? So the absolute truth means it stands the test of time. It stands every test. It's not dependent on anything. So that is Lord Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada was in Hong Kong and one of his disciples, Bhurijan Prabhu, had invited him for a stay there. So one local Hindu group there had come to meet Srila Prabhupada, and they invited Srila Prabhupada the next day to visit a local Lord Shiva temple. And Srila Prabhupada was just so happy. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, we'll go there. And Bhurijan Prabhu was kind of shocked to see the active look on Srila Prabhupada's face to visit the temple. So after this person left, and he had already been assured that Lord Srila Prabhupada would come, not Lord. So then Bhurijan Prabhu said, Prabhupada, this is Lord Shiva temple. Are you sure you want to go there? So when he asked this, Bhurijan Prabhu writes, Srila Prabhupada's look was really a stern look. What do you mean? That's how he responded. So then Bhurijan Prabhu writes, I was thinking now the thunderbolt is going to fall on me. It seemed Bhurijan Prabhu had not asked a good question, because Prabhupada had already agreed to go, and now he is saying as if it's something wrong to do. And then Bhurijan Prabhu corrected himself, seeing that look of receiving a thunderbolt. He said, but Prabhupada, they worship Shiva as the supreme personality of Godhead. Then Prabhupada said, oh, is it like that? And then we want to go. So till this thing was mentioned, that they worship Shiva as the supreme Lord, Srila Prabhupada was quite open to go there. Why? Because he saw Lord Shiva as Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. So we can also go to demigod temples in the proper mood, with the proper consciousness. But only if it does not send a wrong message to others. One time this question was asked in one ISKCON management meeting, that what if there is a Lord Shiva temple and it's being neglected and it is proposed to be handed over to ISKCON? And we are given freedom to install our deities, Gaur Nitya, Radha Krishna. But on one condition, that you keep Lord Shiva there. It's an old temple. So would we accept it? So then the point came, our acharyas are showing, we worship Lord Shiva. Gopeshwar Mahadev is there. Nandeshwar Mahadev is there. Chakaleshwar Mahadev is there. But in today's time and circumstance, most people do not have the time to come and sit with you and inquire about the tattva. So imagine an ISKCON temple where you have Radha Krishna temple and you also have a Shivalinga there. So culturally already it's a hodgepodge outside. Everything is at the same level. So then people might misconstrue that we give equal importance to the Shivalinga and also to the Supreme Lord, which means we consider them on the equal level. Whereas the pujari who is worshipping Radha Krishna, he'll worship Radha Krishna as the Supreme Lord and then give the Mahaprasad to Lord Shiva. In one of the famous GSB, Ganpati mandals in Worli, which is very huge, very famous, when they offer bhoga, they don't offer bhoga to the Ganpati deity. They offer bhoga to a small shaligram, which is for all practical purposes invisible, but they know who's the Supreme Lord. So they offer it to shaligram, and that Mahaprasad they offer to Ganpati. So they are doing it rightly. But the question is, do people who visit the pandal, do they understand all this? So most people who come there, they don't understand all this. So then the discussion was that as far as our consciousness is concerned, we are clear about our consciousness. But as far as the message that might go, we are not really ready for this right now. But most people might misunderstand that we also are into, you know, dual worship. So to give a very clear message, it was decided that in our temples, we won't have Shivalinga, although in our hearts, we'll always pray to Lord Shiva. So that's why we see in ISKCON temples, we'll never see any demigod deity for explicit reasons. This is our message and this is what we want to stick to. But internally, this mood we can learn from Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when we discourage demigod worship, why do we discourage? We respect them. We are seeing references in the Bhagavatam also, in the lives of the Acharyas also, living Bhagavat also. But then why do we discourage it? So there's nothing against the demigods. The thing is that, what is the function of the demigods? Or we are not against the person, we are against the culture or the legacy that he sets. As a person, he knows what is right. As a person, he is just doing what he has been told to do. But what is he encouraging? So if you see, in common English we would call it the work reward syndrome. You work hard, you get a good reward. So in one sense, this is the primary thought in somebody who works outside. I'll put my energy more, this is how I'll earn more. When I earn more, I'll naturally enjoy more. So this is why people are foaming at their mouths, working hard day and night, because they feel just by working hard I control my income. And when I control my income, through my income I also control the sources of my enjoyment. But then as you progress in life, you understand actually there is very feeble, very weak connection between what you work and what you earn. There are people who work less and earn more, and there are people who are working day and night, but they don't earn so much. Going a step forward, you also understand there is not much connection between what I earn and what I actually enjoy. Because many times people earn a lot, but actually what falls in their plate is very less. Whereas there are some people, circumstantially, even if they earn a little less, they get access to it fully. They don't have to share it with their family members, they don't have to share it with others, and they can actually enjoy a lot. So, I would say this is encouraging the unearth of controllership. I decide what happens in my life. So more somebody worships demigods and they are also chayeva, so they award. It creates that mood in a person that I am the controller of my life. So that's not very good, because we know we are not the controllers of our life. The second thing that happens when somebody gets into more of this worshipping demigod mentality is there is already lust, there is already greed which is dormant in our heart. And when you read injunctions in the Vedas about worshipping the demigods, mostly it is for a purpose. It is very, 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 very rarely just for the sake of it. They are people in high position, so worship them for their position. Mostly, I want to know how will that position help me in my wish fulfillment. So, when somebody is propagating demigod worship, he's actually fanning the lust that is dormant in everyone's heart. So the whole process, why we are here in the material world is because we have not been able to give up our enjoying mentality. So one is the controller mentality, aham, and then is mama. These are the two obstacles. So aham is, you know, I am the controller, and mama is all these things belong to me and I need to enjoy them. That's why they are mine. So when you look at demigod worship, mama and aham both happen. You become the controller, I decide what happens in my life, and then what happens in my life, then I can enjoy it, which are not very good. You know, currently, there are a lot of seminars going on in the outside world about what is the proper method of parenting your children. Parenting is a big topic in the outside world today. Loss of culture. Previously, there would be your grandfather, grandmother staying with you, the child's grandfather and grandmother. So then there would be a lot of grandparenting also happening. But now in the absence of grandparents, now it's the whole burden is on the parents. And sometimes in modern times, both the parents are working. So the child is, you know, if parents do parenting and grandparents do grandparenting, then what does Google do? We can call it Googling. So mostly children today are being brought up by Googling. All they have is, who's taking care of them? Some computer, some TV games, like that. So in today's parenting seminars, this thing is called, I read one article, this is by a famous Western parenting expert, John Roseman. So he says, the mantra is, your kids are not the most important members of your family. So usually, you know, this is like a very disturbing line to hear, because every parent feels, everything that I do is for my children. The money that I earn is for my children. But he is saying, yes, internally you could have that consciousness of protection, of affection. But if you express it in your actions, he grows up thinking, everything that is happening is for me. So it seems I am the most important person. And then life, when it shatters this misconception, it is too hard for this person to accept. So he gives some case studies, like there was this person who grew up alone in a family and very much pampered, and then when this person got married and that other person would not reciprocate in the same affectionate way as this person expected, then in a very short time it led to separation. Or there are people who grew up alone and every wish before they expressed it was already supplied, and when they started working in a corporate culture and where their boss was not of the same mood as their parents, it led to a lot of depression, it led to a lot of problems. So he says, your kids are not the most important members of your family, teach them. He gives an example that in the army, the soldiers are not the most important members of the army. The generals, they are the most important members of the family or the army, and the soldiers are supposed to obey the commands of the generals. If the soldiers become the most important members of the army won't function. They are important in the terms of training. They are important in terms of they should be given care, encouragement. But beyond that, if you extend this too much, it will spoil them. So it has to be told right from day one, the generals of the army are the most important. You obey them. However, for obeying them, whatever is required will supply you. So similarly, he says, if it is mentioned, actually the most important members of this family are the mother and the father. If this is imbibed on children, they grow up grateful. They still receive what they would have received in the other case. But along with it comes gratitude. Along with it does not come controller mentality. It does not come, how did I not get what I wanted? Their demands, you know, they don't become the controlling major factors of the growth of their lives. So similarly, just like it is mentioned that please do not fan this demanding mentality, this controlling mentality in children for their betterment. Similarly, it is mentioned how in our human society, if any philosophy is encouraging this mentality, you ask, they will supply, enjoy what they supply. How will somebody get out of the controller mentality? How will somebody get out of that enjoyment mentality? So not good. That's why we don't espouse demigod worship, although we respect demigods. Krishna calls this world very clearly, Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. So this is the definition from the creator himself. Now what do the demigods supply? Demigods supply sensual enjoyment, that's their reach, which is, I would say, they themselves are temporary, what they supply is temporary, and what is born out of sensual contact, dukkha yonaya evate, so in that sense also it's temporary. Something that is giving me happiness today, that same thing will be the source of my unhappiness tomorrow. So, first of all, it is dukkhalayam, and then it is ashashvatam also. So, why would somebody encourage this mentality? You stay here, I will keep supplying you ashashvatam objects, which will not only sometimes directly they are sources of misery, even if they are a happiness today, because they are ashashvatam, immediately next day, the same object will give me unhappiness. So, what is the solution for dukkhalayam ashashvatam? So, I saw this shloka 9.2, which Krishna says, Rajavidya Rajaguhyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha. So somebody says, I don't want promises. I don't want theology. Don't tell me it will happen in the future. Krishna is saying, if you do this, it is Pratyaksha. You can enjoy happiness even within the realm of pure devotional service. Then you say, how is it possible? So it's Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam, because it is walking on the path of dharma. This world is ruled by the principles of dharma. You can't neglect them. And then he says, if you don't believe me, it is su sukham kartum avyayam. So we want to focus on these two words, su sukham and avyayam. If you see, these are the two antonyms, opposites of the two words that Krishna himself uses to describe this world. He says dukkhalayam and ashashvatam. And then he says, the only antidote to dukkhalayam ashashvatam is sukhalayam, susukham. But what if somebody says, are aapne jo diya hai susukham, what if that is also temporary? And he says, avyayam. It is not temporary. It does not even undergo diminution. What to speak that it is temporary? It will, suk will become dukh or dukh will become suk. No. It will not become dukh. There is no avyayam. There is no vyaya. It won't even decrease. So the solution for dukkhalayam ashashvatam is not demigod worship, where you just, there is a wound here and you patch it with a band-aid. There is a wound here and you put some Dettol there. The solution for a wound is to teach the person to never ever get a wound again, which is susukham avyayam. So real solution to life and miseries in the material world is not demigod worship, trying to just patch up here and there, but it is truly devotional service. Now, the question is, if it is very clearly mentioned, susukham kartum avyayam, why would not majority of the people follow this process? It is susukham, it is avyayam. Why? Because if you see, sensual enjoyment is very much visible in this world. When somebody has a drink, a cold drink, a soft drink in his hand, and he puts it to his mouth, and he has sweat, and the look on his face is visible, it is perceivable. You can immediately see, he's enjoying. Whereas somebody who is chanting Hare Krishna, most people, it's very rare to have access to a pure chanter. Somebody who is actually relishing chanting of the holy names. So even if by mistake I come to a place where bhakti yoga is being propagated, it is being practiced, and every day the sadhaka reads this shloka, su sukham kartum avyayam. But one look at his face, and it takes a lot of faith. He's like chanting Hare Krishna, yes? So, very difficult to put faith. Yes. So faith is that factor that is in scarcity. And because faith is in scarcity, pratyaksha praman gets more importance, it gets more weight. And that's where demigod worshippers or demigod, those who also propagate demigod worship, they get an upper hand as regards to those who preach Vaishnavism or those who are propagating Vaishnavism. So what is this faith? One person defined faith. He said, faith is to take the first step when the entire staircase is not visible. When the entire staircase is visible, it's easy to do that. But when it's not visible, will I take the first step? So in Chaitanya Shikshamrit, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks of two types of Shraddha. He says, Komala Shraddha and Dhrida Shraddha. And then he mentions, Dhrida Shraddha is what Lord Chaitanya explained in Shikshashtakam. But as far as Komal Shraddha is concerned, Komal Shraddha, he says, he explained to Sanatana Goswami in his teachings. So there is, that is where that whole process means. Adav Shraddha, Tatha Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti Syad. And then comes Nishtha. So if you see this, because most of us are in Komal Shraddha, we are not Dhrida Shraddha. So if you see this step-by-step process, we are talking of a staircase. Adav Shraddha. So because of our past, maybe Bhakti Unmukhi Sukruti, favorable to Bhakti Sukruti probably that we have done. So we have some Shraddha. Also it is said Shraddha is a gift of those who have Shraddha. Shraddha cannot be earned. Shraddha is, faith is a gift of the faithful. So probably somewhere we associated with somebody faithful, we pleased him. And then as a result of that we have that certain minimum Shraddha that gets us started on this invisible staircase because it's not visible. So let's say I took the first step. I am on the first step of this staircase to the Supreme Lord. Pure Bhakti. Now after taking the first step, if I am all alone on this staircase, how long will I last? How long will I go? That's why it is mentioned, Adav Shraddha. But then you have to supplement your Shraddha with Sadhu Sangha. If you do not supplement it with Sadhu Sangha, you won't last on that staircase. So I am just picturizing myself. I am there on the staircase and the end is invisible. And there are very few people on the staircase. And I am on that staircase. So I might begin this journey by stepping on the first step. But then if there are no people on the staircase above me, prodding me, encouraging me, pulling me with their actions, pulling me with their encouragement, it's very difficult to walk a staircase which is already scantily populated. There's nobody there. And also the end is not visible. So mostly, what will keep us on the path of bhakti? It begins with Shraddha. But a very critical element for us to not step off the staircase will be the association of those kind souls who are above us, who are ahead of us, but they spend a good amount of time not just walking their journey up, but they also spend a good amount of their time looking back and encouraging those behind them. We are dependent on such great souls. If we sever our connection with those great souls, it's only a question of time that we will step down from the ladder. Yes. So, and it is mentioned how for these events, athletics events, when there are 10 athletes in a 100 meter sprint, now what do you feel for somebody to reach that final sprint match in the Olympics? Is there much difference between these personalities? If you see, you know, roughly all of them have the same strength. All of them have the same, I would say, gut, you know, the grit. They have the determination. I have to do it. Yes. What will actually make a difference is their mental strength. Because at the time of that final critical match, there are a lot of things going on. There's a lot of pressure from your peers. There's a lot of pressure from your coaches. There's a lot of pressure probably from your family members. Many times, you know, it has been seen how when somebody wins, you know, immediately the family members jump off the stadium and because they feel we are part of this success. So finally at that moment what matters is your psychological strength, your mental strength rather than the physical strength. During the training also, for somebody to win a 100 meter sprint, the current, you know, champion in the world is a person called Usain Bolt. He's called Bolt. He's like a bolt. He's like an arrow. He holds the record. You know, there was this information about him that how much did he practice for to win this this post, this position. He said he's been practicing for 6 years. 6 years, 24 hours a day, his only mission is that he wants to run and run. And that's when you develop not just that, you know, that body, but also the psyche. And then, you know, it's a day-to-day struggle actually. Because just like we have experience in our own lives, we also have our own missions. We also have our own goals to achieve. But then there is reversals also. There is sickness. This bodily sickness is for everyone. Janma Mrutyu Jara Vyadhi is for everyone. It means it is also for these people. Family disturbances. We have undergone family disturbances. It happens for them also. insults, criticisms, disappointments, they are there in our lives also. They are there for them. But then what made him persevere? Mostly, it could be Shraddha, his own Shraddha. He saw somebody struggling. But many times, it depends to a large extent on the coach. That's why these athletes will spend a lot of time selecting the proper coach. And many times, I have personally seen in terms of cricket coaches in my previous life, yes, when I was not so much into devotional life, I have seen many times very expert cricket stars having a very good physique, yes. But when I looked at their coaches, I thought, hey, he does not even have a good physique also. I have seen pot-bellied coaches. And at that time, I used to wonder, how come he is a coach for this person? So it is only now that I realize it is not about the physique of this person. The contribution of a coach is not just how to move your hand and how to do that. The primary contribution of a coach is how to stay put. When the whole stadium is shouting, encouraging the team against whom you are playing the match, and now the whole focus of your team is on you, now it depends on you, how do you keep your focus that you still keep your focus on the ball and you hit the ball when everyone practically in that stadium is against you? So finally, at that critical moment, that is what will determine whether we succeed or not. Similarly, in spiritual life, you know, it's almost like, you know, everyone is discouraging and not everyone is encouraging. And then your Shraddha is also Kobal Shraddha. Who will last? Those will last who have good connections with those who encourage them. Those will last who not just have Shraddha in themselves, their own abilities, but they have Shraddha in the abilities, the encouragement of those who encourage them. Yes? Shraddha Sthan. So all of us, you know, we should realize this. Adav Shraddha. Tatha Sadhu Sangha. The Sadhu Sangha is a very critical part beyond which, you know, we won't progress much. And then what is the contribution of this person? So in 11.2.40, which is Bhagavatam, so in that purport, Shripad Madhvacharya, he quotes one shloka from the Vayu Puran. So very nice shloka. He says, Kechid Unmadavad Bhakta Bahya Linga Pradarshaka Kechid Antar Bhaktasyu Kechid Chaiva Ubhayatmakaha. So he's saying Kechid Bhakta, some devotees, they behave like madmen, Unmadavat. And there are some devotees, Vaishnavas, who are very introspective. They don't behave like mad people. And then he says there are Kechid Ubhayatmaka. Sometimes they behave like mad people and sometimes they are very introspective inside. So he says, Vaishnavas are of different natures. Don't judge them from externals. If we are somebody who is a spontaneous person, we do not like somebody who is very methodical. If we are very methodical, we do not appreciate spontaneity. But he is saying, Vaishnavas are of different types. Then he mentions what is the boon of a devotee. He says, Mukha prasadat dradhyat cha. I'll explain what this means. Mukha prasada dradhyacha bhaktir geya na chanyataha. So what it mentions is, so the fruit of association of a devotee is not his spontaneity. The fruit of association of a devotee is not his methodical style of working. The real fruit of association of a devotee is mukha prasadat. So mukha prasadat means the merciful, sweet sound vibrations that will come from him. The Krishna Katha that will come from him. The Harinam that he chants. And in our context, I would like to add, the kind words of encouragement that he will keep giving you at your moments of struggle. Mukha Prasadat. And then the second word he means is Dradhyat. So Dradhya is like the noun form of the verb Dridha. Dridhata. Dridhata means determined. So noun is determination. So he's saying, what are the two true gifts of a Vaishnava? The two true gifts of a Vaishnava is his sound vibration, his words of encouragement, and his practical personal example of being steadfast in his devotional service. So keval bol nahi rahe wo, wo karke bhi dikha rahe. So if you see some Vaishnava who is steadfast, he may be spontaneous, he may be methodical, that does not matter. Is he steadfast? That is his mercy. His example is mercy. Just by looking at him, we get faith. Oh, he is on the fifth step. It means he has gone through the first step. All the struggles that we are undergoing right now, which seem to us to be really, really disturbing, somebody who's above you has already undergone that. Krishna won't allow somebody to come to the fifth step without going through the first step. He won't allow a Vaishnava to reach the fifth step bypassing the second and the third step. So if we are on the first step and we look at the second step and we, oh, this is insurmountable, this is very difficult. Believe me, somebody is on the fifth step, has undergone that test. So his dridhata and his mukha prasadat is actually what is his gift. So what is the gift of a Vaishnava? The gift of a Vaishnava is, he gives us faith to continue walking on that staircase. When the rest of the world says, this staircase, we don't know where it goes, and it's, you know, it's not visible. Look at all these people here. They are enjoying sensually. Why don't I do that? Let me practice demigod worship. In the 17th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, he gives one definition of the living entity. He says, Sattvano Rupa Sarvasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharata. He says, according to your existence, your faith is affected. And then he says, very interestingly, he says, Shraddha Mayo Ayam Purusho Yoya Shraddha Sa Eva Saha. He says, actually, you know what? The living entity is Shraddha Maya. Just like we say, it is Chinmaya. Krishna in the Gita says, he is Shraddha Maya. Sach bataun aapko. Actually, a person is determined by what he keeps his Shraddha in. Jiski jaisi Shraddha, uske jaisi uski soch, vaise uske kartavya, vaise uske karm, vaise uske rehen sehen. This is what Krishna is saying. So then there is Shraddha in the mode of ignorance, there is Shraddha in the mode of passion, there is Shraddha in the mode of goodness. So what is Shraddha in the mode of goodness? Those who worship the demigods. What is Shraddha in the mode of passion? Those who worship, big people or somebody who is very popular in this world. And what is Shraddha in the mode of ignorance? Yaksha Rakshamsi. Those who worship lower beings like ghosts and like that. So where is Shraddha for Vasudev? Where is Shraddha for Krishna here? It is not in the mode of goodness. It is not in the mode of passion. It is not in the mode of goodness. Shraddha for Vasudev, Shraddha for Krishna is Shraddha Parayopetas. Same Yukta Tamomata. Krishna says Shraddha Parashraddha. It is divine Shraddha. It is not affected by the modes. So essentially, who can worship Krishna? Only those who has Parashraddha. And who will have Parashraddha? He is that person who receives Parashraddha as a gift. And who can give gift of Parashraddha? Those who have Parashraddha. So it is only devotees who have access to Krishna, who have faith in Krishna, only they can grant us Parashraddha. And only that Parashraddha will keep us on the path of devotional service. Any other Shraddha that we have, Shraddha Maya, we are Parashraddha Maya. We can't escape Shraddha. We can't work without Shraddha. Everything that we do is based on Shraddha. But then who will survive the path of bhakti? It is those who are associated with Vaishnavas. In fact, you know, there are preachers in the Western world. I know one preacher. He is like maybe 2 feet tall. He has no hands. He has no legs. And from an ordinary perspective, he would be a person who would be a fit candidate to promote atheism. Look what God did to me. Mujhe kya mila? Yes, but if you look at his, what does he do? All he does is, he preaches the path of God. So he has a very amazing way of preaching. He, you know, there's people in front of him, and then he's standing on a table without, he has just 2 stumps here. There's some protruding flesh as hands and 2 protruding parts of flesh for his legs. So he's standing, and as he's speaking, he's preaching the message of God. Whatever he understands. Suddenly he falls down. So now everyone is watching him, and then he falls down like this. And no hands, no legs. So how does he get up now? It's a big struggle just for him to get up from his position. So after a lot of struggling and this and that, finally he stands. And then he says, I do not have any complaints against God, because if I could not get up, that would be a reason to complain against God. But look at me, no hands, no legs. But still, when I fall down completely horizontally, I have the ability given by God for me to stand up. So you all who have hands and legs, and sometimes life pushes you down, why would you complain against God? And that scene, if you see, people are in tears. He immediately, with his own example, with his own dridhata, with his own mukha prasadat, he instills faith in the hearts of people. Please do not cry for the shortcomings in your life. Please do not cry for the difficulties in your life. Thank God for the strength that He has given to you internally, Shraddha, and the strength that He has given to you in the form of Vaishnavas to deal with those problems. As Sripad Ramanujacharya was leaving from this world, his disciples were crying. So when they were crying, Srila Ramanujacharya said, "Why are you crying? I should be crying on you." So why is that? Because you will stay in the material world and I am going back to the spiritual world. So it's very clear when you associate with Vaishnavas, you know, the focus is clear. They also see everything, but their focus is on the spiritual world. Their focus is on their Shraddha is Dhrida Shraddha. Their Shraddha cannot be wavered by the experiences of this world. They undergo Pratyaksha Avagam Dharma, Susukham, Kartum, Avyayam. And it is only when we associate with these Vaishnavas can we progress in our own devotional service. I was just thinking about this, that, you know, one seventh chapter in the Gita, Krishna says, how when somebody reposes his faith in the demigods, it is Krishna who strengthens that faith in that demigod. Why? Because he has chosen this particular deity and Krishna is a non-envious, non-jealous God. But I have not come across any reference where Krishna says, I repose the faith of a living entity in my pure devotees. So Krishna is saying, demigods ki taraf jo faith hai, I supply. But have you ever come across, you can always let me know, where Krishna says, you know what, when people in this world have faith in my pure devotees, you know what is the source of that faith? It is I who supply that faith. I would like to present something. Why would he not say that? Because the behavior of the devotee, of the demigods, dridhata, we are discussing mukha prasadat and dridhata. The mukha prasadat also changes. Sometimes they glorify Krishna, sometimes they speak in a way that is not exactly in line with bhakti principles. Their dridhata is also not constant. We see in the examples of Indra becoming angry on the Vrajavasis. Actually, even after the whole Leela, when Indra feels remorse and he approaches Krishna, all his prayers are primarily motivated by fear. He chants 4 or 5 prayers. If you look at those prayers, there's no affection there. It is all of fear. He thinks, you are the Supreme Lord, and I offended you, and I offended your people. Please do not call Yamraj and punish me. Why? Because when Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill, he did not punish Indra per se. It was primarily to protect the Vrajavasis, and he punished Indra by smashing his pride. But there was no punishment. So because the demigods are dealing with the gross matters, they deal with objects for enjoyment and like that, it's very difficult for Indra to conceive of a punishment that is not a physical punishment. Actually, that's a big punishment. To smash somebody's ego is a big punishment. But he prays, please do not bring Yamraj now. I'm very sorry. And then he says, please grant me the boon that I will never ever become impure in my consciousness. So he understands to some extent that the problem started when I thought prithak ishamanina. I thought myself to be an independent controller. I'm a dependent controller. But when he prays that, it is mentioned, it is highlighted, Krishna also reciprocates. So Krishna says, Gamyatam Bhadram Shakram. He says, okay, everything said and done, I order you to go and resume your duties. Anushasanam. Aap abhi anushasan kijiye. Aapko jo duty diya hai, wo diya. But Krishna does not promise Indra that he will never again become impure in his consciousness. So why is it that he is begging, please, never ever again allow me to become impure. Let me always remain subordinate. But Krishna does not promise him that. Because Krishna detects his prayers are not sincere prayers. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur highlights this. Indra's prayers were not heartfelt prayers because just a few minutes later, from his perspective, he again had a fight with Krishna when he took a parijat tree. So if he was sincerely offering his prayers, so here it happened maybe over a period of 80-90 years, on the earthly planets, which means a few minutes in the heavenly planets. So he just now begged forgiveness, and immediately after a few minutes from the heavenly perspective, he again fights with Krishna. Seriously, for a tree. It means he never offered. So because Krishna knows the heart, and because Indra did not offer those prayers very sincerely, Krishna does not grant him immunity from impurity. But Krishna says, you can resume your duty. So as far as position is concerned, Krishna freely awards positions to people. But as far as his own affection is concerned, as far as purity of the heart is concerned, Krishna says, it's not so easy. For that, you'll have to associate with my pure devotees. Again, this example comes in the comparison between Chitraketu Maharaj and Parvati Devi. Stark example right there. How Chitraketu Maharaj happily accepts the curse. So last shloka spoken by Chitraketu Maharaj, if you say, he says, Kshamyatam. He says, please pardon me, O Devi. But what does he pardon? What does he ask pardon for? He does not ask pardon for undoing the curse that she has spoken. He asks pardon for the hurt that he caused to Parvati Devi. So this is a contrast between Indra, who is seeking forgiveness from punishment, but he's already got what he should have received. That is, his pride got smashed. Whereas you see Chitraketu, he says, please pardon me. But what for? Arey, aapne jo shaap diya hai, you have cursed me. I don't want an undoing of that. That is Kritanjali Ambike. Oh, my mother, with folded hands, I gratefully accept. You are my mother, I'll accept that. But you know what I want forgiveness for? Actually, when I spoke those harsh words, seemingly harsh words against Lord Shiva, it hurt your heart. Please forgive me for the hurt in your heart. And that is why Lord Shiva is also conquered by these words. And then he says, oh my dear Parvati Devi, you think you are very beautiful, but by his character, he was sensitive for the hurt caused. He is not asking for the demon's body that he is going to receive. So he has outdone you in his beauty. So again and again, you know, this is the character of the Vaishnava. So Mukha Prasadacha, Dradyacha. So then what prayers can we ever offer to demigods if we come across some demigod temple in our travels or when we are moving around? Suppose if we can always pray to the demigods, oh my dear Prabhu, please give me strength, please give me attraction for associating with pure devotees, for serving them, and also please lead me further on the path to your own master. You are serving Krishna, you are serving the Supreme Lord, please me also, allow me also to serve. This would be a fit prayer if we come across the demigod. So here it is mentioned, Chayeva Karma Sachiva Sadhavo Dina Vatsala. Sadhus are Dina Vatsala. So many more examples can be cited, but then we are running out of time. So within whatever limited time we have, we spoke a little bit. Thank you very much for your patient listening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda ki jai.